I have a list of not six, but seven names here now, because there was a bit of a tie situation. I hope all readers are present. Is there anyone lingering outside having a stress cigarette? They're all in the stairs. Okay. Can you hear me in the stairwell? Serious fire hazards tonight, no less. Okay, I assume they're in no particular order. Okay.
And it'll be random anyway in their calling.
Okay, thanks again to our judges for coming up with these seven names. And in no particular order, our finalists for the next round are Jim Crickard. Cathal Holden. Richard Pearce. Lauren McNamara. Sue Blue. Kieran McCartan. And finally, our seventh contestant is Mel White. Thank you so much to all our other contestants. I'm sure you had a very hard job, the judges. So we're going to go straight into round two, right? We're going to go straight into round two. Okay. I suppose we want to randomize this as well. Do you want to tear off?
I want all of them.
You have those names and all.
I want all of them.
Oh yeah, okay. You just take everything there now. So, okay, round two, seven contestants, and we will continue as per usual.
Cathal Holden.
Let's go.
It's early, bird and worm awake. I meditate, I wash, I shave, face my reflection in the microwave, get change like I got lives to save, then out into the underworld I run to work beside the train. I grapnel and I rappel up the building side. I crip walk past the window on the top floor of your mind. I clock in on the precipice and for a shift I just exist, hanging from the long hand by my goddamn fingertips. On top of my metropolis, taking the pre-apocalypse, all circus and no bread. It only swells inside your stomach, makes you feel like you've been fed. And it's all evolution when the mysteries are said. But I'm discussing revolution and I'm pondering the pledge. Cause they're insured in case of rain of blood. They're paid if there's a plague of frog. The system moves the wealth around from the bottom to the top. We hit the chicken soup kitchen for the bulletproof soul. Soup of the day-to-day is a sense of self-control. We're driving stick and leaded. She's a priest on in the abattoir. We feed the vultures and the cannons by the grease-collecting reservoir. I empty out my pencil pairings for the woodworm and the pigeonholes, then it's back to shrinking giants to the wrong end of a microscope. And the future's writ upon the wall between the closing downs and coming soons. I'm sorry we can't serve you now, the kitchen's out of wooden spoons. And it's pinstripe every day, tourniquet casual, numb from the neck down, vegetable animal, underworld, underground, peacoat and scarf. I feel a little gangrene round the guillotine scars. See, it's ever so easy to be perfectly balanced if you're standing on the shoulders of the vertically challenged. I light a cartoon cigar. I step into the street. Maybe it was drawn bad and maybe I'm just cheap. And I pay my respects at a hatchet's grave. Then it's a quick trip back to the batshit cave where I change as though the day was saved, though all I've saved are rainy days. I keep an appointment with my anesthesiologist. She dispenses purple evenings from an easy full of novelists, sat between the cavemen and off-duty anthropologists with the other broken broncos from the rodeo clown colleges. And I'm like, hey, with a long face. I take a cig. I started on the vaporizer. I've been in the saddle thanks to emotional stabilizers. You've got my prescription. I don't have to ask. Every night is bin night. We go out with the trash. Thank you.
It started in a dark place. There were those who believed it started with a big bang, and those who believed it started with a word from the lips of one man. But the truth was, it started underground. It started the way all things start to grow. It started in a dark place in the harsh depths of winter. It started with a seed bomb. It started under the ground, in the graves of Palestinians, in the rubble that remained of a town, in the eyes of a woman covered by a burqa. It started in a dark place. It started in the skin of children who labored in sweatshops, raked through landfills, mined for cobalt. It started in slums without sunlight. It started in a dark place. It started in the guts of fish suffocated by plastic, in the last gasp of the polar bear, in the horn of a rhino prized by poachers. It started when sea levels rose, when the earth was quaking and people fled their homes amid floods and droughts and hurricanes. It started in a dark place. It started in tower blocks, in tenements and homeless shelters, hobbit holes and squats with windows boarded, curtains closed. It started underground, in tunnels dug to protest the cutting of trees and the laying of pipelines. It started with campaigns and petitions, banners and parades. It started in student bars and warehouse parties, at campfires when guitars were passed around. It started with conversation. It started with education. It started with meditation. It started the way all things start to grow. It started with slowing down. It started with stopping. It started when we stopped pushing forward and pulled back into the earth. It started a cycle of rebirth. When the trees had shed their leaves and people stopped believing in eternal growth, it started with letting go of greed, with letting there be winter so that seeds could sprout again. It started in a dark place. It started in barren soil and former carbon sinks where forests were clear felled, in arid desert scrub where nomads dwelled. It started in the ears of those who could hear the whispers of water. In the stories told to their daughters, it started with listening to the moon. It started in silence. It started in unspoken dialects. It started without violence. It started with a vision. When mankind was asleep, it started creeping into dream time and wrapping around our feet with a capacity of bindweed. It started to unite us, to rewrite the pathology learnt in our childhood. It started a new mythology, a new awareness that the biosphere is shared. People started to care. They started to look for solutions. It started a revolution. It ended pollution, ended oppression, ended the perception that human nature's cruel and survival of the fittest meant every man for himself. It ended poverty and wealth. It ended war. There were those who believed it would end with a big bang, and those who believed there was no end to the damage done by man. But the truth was, it ended the way it all began. Shrank back into the earth, refertilized the soil, and prepared the ground for the future. It ended the way all things cease to grow. Thank you.
Recently, my mind went under a capitulation, resulting in the self-stipulation demanding that I become stern and learn to be heard. And I knew then it was time to leave my line of work. And initially, it was discerning, learning that there was a world that revolved without me. And I spent some time estranged from the reality of earning. But after a few weeks, it became apparent that my expedition into creative exposition went into remission and led nowhere productive. Well, in a monetary sense, at least. So my life became reductive as my income ceased to a dribble of cash in hand, odd jobs. I robbed the tax man as best I can to fund a caffeine addiction with the restriction of knowing that what I spend, it was never going to be replaced. And I traced my life through day-to-day delusions, a fusion of illusions, avoiding questions of my future, sutured by the fact that, I mean, I'm still relatively young, yet so highly strung. I sung a few songs and I sung myself into the mold of an artist, but I was unable to resist the tempests of creative stasis. My moods and flux, the crux of all our lives, arrived at my undecided mind. That's what the fuck am I doing with my life? because as you probably know, simply existing doesn't hold an economical value. And in lieu of society devolving into a meritocracy where I receive on the basis of a social standing, or a kleptocracy where it's permissible to just take as I fancy, I need to figure out some ways of making money while maintaining sanity. But my vanity, it's compounded because I'm surrounded by friends whose momentum, it just seems unfounded. Happy with their lives, it's visible in their eyes. And accounts that are once queried, would I prefer to live life either sedate and easy or poor and interesting? And the sting is that I think I want the best of both. But I feel like I have neither.
Visiting Granny in the visiting room with the armchairs and a broken grand piano that still plays beautifully if you know which keys to use. Granny smiles, her eyes as young as ever, and she just keeps singing these old Irish songs, and she tries to get you to sing along even though you don't know the words, but you just pretend because she's lost her hearing aids again and she can't tell if you don't. But she is happy and carefree and just has fun, and she lives now in her own world, and that's a place of music and splendor, and the staff in the nursing home take care of her, and she's come to realize she probably won't go home, but she's okay with that, and she asks how her husband is, and you say he's fine. You bring her a magazine and she loves this because her eyesight is better than yours and she sees everything. She sees you and tells you, you got so tall and also a little fat. And she tells those around you that you're a good scholar in school and you'll become a teacher soon. And she gets presents on her first day, on Mother's Day, on Christmas, and she tries to give them away because she doesn't want to have too many things. And she asks how her husband is and you say he's fine. You bring in your girlfriend to meet her. She smiles, says she's pretty, and asks when you're getting married. And I say, not for a while, but when I turn to confide her, she confides in her that she thinks she'll make a lovely bride. And to be fair, I am the oldest grandchild, and well, Granny's 93, and she just wants to party. But she tells you it was a hard day seeing Granddad in hospital, and it was difficult to see that man in a bed like that. And you agree and say, I'm so sorry, and then you just shake your head because she hates to wear her hearing aids. And then she asks how her parents are. And you know to tell her they're fine, because the first time you didn't lie, you said they'd passed away, and she asked, when? And you said a long time ago, and she looked at you and asks, why didn't anyone tell me? I didn't even get to say goodbye. And then she asks what happened to her family home that she hasn't been to in over 40 years, and you say you don't know, and then you just shake your head because she can't hear you. And then she sings. And she's happy and carefree, and she tells you, you got to go now because it's lunchtime and you're in the way. And she laughs and smiles, and you do too.
A hen party in the George. We're out in force from Tullamore and we're going to the Gays. I want my own Graham Norton. She wants an Alan Carr. So we're heading for the Gay Bear. Be careful around corners. Don't make eye contact at the bar. Look out for the mom. She's on safari in search of exotic birds. For a parrot to echo her punchlines, or maybe a cockatoo. They're prowling around the cocktail lounge. They're looking for me and you. The mother of the bride uses her lazy eye as an advantage. Edging into a group of faces with meandering conversation, blocking their exit, unsure who she's addressing, as she talks about her gay hairdresser and how great he is with the scissors. I've never had a problem with the gays now myself, she says, pausing to sip from a pink plastic penis. Pausing for praise. And one by one, the gays fly south, migrating to the bar, to the dance floor, to South Africa if necessary. Snobs, she calls them. Them gays can be awful touchy. All is soon lost and forgotten when she sees the Black Crow drag queen stalking her long legs across the stage. 7 feet tall, silver crown of feathers, reflecting light off the disco ball. Jesus, she says, stealing the microphone. You're looking better than me. I should feckin' hope so. You're twice me bleeding age. Slowly, slowly, the hen party has pissed off all of the George, abandoning punctured plastic husbands all over the stage, flashing so many cameras it feels like E.T.'s family has landed. A gathering parliament of lesbians encircles the hens. A murder of goths flies down from the VIP lounge. I wonder if they've seen Hitchcock's movie, The Birds.
Of Twisted Tongue. I'm not a pleasant fucker, I'm the pleasant fucker's son, and I'm going undercover as a motherfucking nun. Kicking your bad habits and sucking off your scum. It's not that I'm an addict, I just do it cause it's fun. I'd be just as glad if the ending never comes. A staple in your sadness like a nail in a gun. I've been practicing for madness, seems I'm not the only one. I pretend to be passive, but my silence weighs a ton. Pass me when I'm laughing and catch me when I'm done. Give me my cue for passion, take a lash from my tongue. I've been shorted on my ration of fresh air in my lungs, and I can't cough or gasping, couldn't hide so wouldn't run. Call me Betty on the bread and butter with a bitter taste in my mouth. I was trying to keep it in the cupboard, but it must have been left there. To mention would bring tension, so instead I'll sit and pout. I am deafened by your whispers, but can hardly hear your shouts. A white elephant in a white room is easy not to talk about. All this time spent in costume has got my sense of style in doubt. Get me in my birthday suit and kick me off the casting couch. I only wanted the pursuit to think that I was thought about. You only want me for my youth to give you things you've been without. I've a twisted tongue and sweet tooth, and to my vices I'm devout. Peter's in a pickle, now he's putting pepper in his pipe. His brain's a little brittle and his eyes can only open tight. His friends are acting fickle and his enemies are acting nice. And even though his skin is thick, he's sick of all the talk they shite. Sometimes he's sure they're full of it, others he wonders, are they right? He overdoes it when he's under, goes wandering the streets at night. He's always had a hunger, but of late it seems he's lost his bite. And there's nothing I can conjure that would meet his appetite. For I'm the cook too many in the kitchen spoiling broths, and I put all the fixings into the boiling pot and wait for it to thicken like a slow burning plot, and I will keep on mixing until the penny drops. Yeah.
Those
are our two standing. Help yourselves. Sorry, Sue. Go ahead.
This is called spirals.
Yay!
That day, the arguments flew back and forth, again, round and round, spiraling deep into the night. There is never just one involved in conflict. As we finally lay in the bed, both naked, backs turned, each on the outer edge, I whispered, "Anyway, this is not love." That's when you cracked, jumped out of the bed, yanked me out by my arm, nude as I was, thrust me against the wall and battered me with your fist. My skin too bare to protect me, my arms too short to stop your thrashing, my eardrum too weak to break the thrust of your blow. I had only my eyes to seek yours and hold them with love as much as I could. The only thing I knew might help now, love. As morning rose raw after 2 hours sleep, my head droning and pea warm air seeping from my left ear, I failed my driving test. And winter turned spring in the throes of spiraling, eroding emotions before I was strong enough, hurt enough to make the break finally. Now, a trace of silver hair in my reflection and no more spirals. I bless myself still every day that I did. Okay.